Empire of the Suns.
Suns.
Empire of the Suns.
Wet like on book. Wet like on book. Wet like on book.
Arizona Sports presents the Empire of the Suns podcast.
Empire of the Suns.
Hello there and welcome to the Empire of the Suns podcast. I am a still half asleep Kellen Olson, joined by Kevin Zimmerman. It is Friday morning, probably the start of the afternoon at 11:37, I would
probably
say.
You could look at the clock.
I just did, man. That's why I said 11:37. Will you get off me and my back, man? Jeez.
Crumpy morning.
Yeah, I'm still cranky because my day hasn't really stopped yet. I quite literally woke up to the news of the Suns hiring Monty Williams, signing him to a 5-year deal, and that news became official almost instantaneously after the reports broke from Adrian Wojnarowski and Shams Charania. Kevin, your initial thoughts on what we've been predicting on this podcast to happen ever since Igor Kokoskov got fired?
I will say the second meeting that was supposed to happen, that was Wednesday, and the silence after that was concerning, and for like a 24-hour period, it looked like maybe the Suns were going to botch this. Maybe they were going to have to go three coaches in to get a taker for their head coaching job. But like you said, this is a win, and it doesn't matter for now what you think of Monty Williams, his resume, whatever. The Suns, at least how it's been portrayed in the media, they've had a favorite in this coaching search. They felt around, talked to at least a few other guys in Portland, maybe more, we don't know, and landed back at Monty Williams. Gave him an offer, and he said yes. So just resetting, looking at where they were just like a week ago, this looks pretty good as far as optics, as far as they accomplish what they wanted to. That's as simple as you can make it.
Let's start at the beginning and go from there. And by the beginning, I mean that this always felt like, I flat out pretty much said it on our last podcast, this felt like a fake coaching search that was going on. They interviewing the Portland assistants just to say that they interviewed other candidates. Gambo was saying on the radio yesterday that they had other people that they were looking into and talking to outside of those three names. The two Portland assistants, couldn't tell you their names, and Monty Williams, Vanderpool and Tibbetts. I know what their name is. Joke. I'm just kidding around over here. Starting from there, and then with what I just mentioned at the top, which is that not only does this news break instantly, it also breaks that Woj has it right away and Shams has it right away, and Shams has a 4-year deal, and then right away the Suns tweet something with his picture on it saying he's officially in. Frustrated, probably because it was in that whole thing, and it just projects like they have a smooth running operation over there, which we clearly know that they do not. And I wrote this in my column, it's painfully obvious whenever they're trying to project stability, and I don't think that should go under the radar or unnoticed here. I'm not trying to dismiss the fact that this is a great hire and this is just about the perfect guy that they need. Given the expectations, like, we can't expect them to get Greg Popovich or even Mike Budenholzer was probably just too much of a hope. There was the local angle, there was pretty much the only hope there was that maybe Mike Budenholzer grew up a Suns fan and he wants to come be the savior or whatever. Like, that sort of angle that we had going for a second maybe was the only reason a head coach of that quality in the Suns' current state would come in. So I just wanted to mention that, and that's part of what I wrote about. But with that in mind, this is a good thing, a very good thing that has happened to the Suns, but I still think that it's really important for the fan base to not forget where we came from.
Yeah.
But the whole point of what I wrote and the hope is that this will help us at least forget some of the time that we went through this disastrous 18 months, 3 years, 4 years, whatever the whole timeline you want to call it.
We've been harping on stability, and as much as firing Igor did not seem like it was about stability, this is finally like the GM, the senior VP of basketball ops, and the head coach have a past history. They're all very well-respected guys. James Jones being the one who doesn't have very much on his resume as far as making decisions in a front office, but so far he's been like trustworthy. You know what you're getting out of him. So when you bring these three guys together, they know each other. They've laid out everything, as James Jones said. Like, they discussed, it looks like Williams, as he should, asked, like, hey, how do I know I'll have a job? That kind of thing in a year. They seem to be in a good place. And so when we talk about stability, that's at least we could say, okay, it's in place. These guys seem to have the right heads on their shoulders. And now we can move forward to the basketball things, which on this podcast, if you haven't noticed, we love talking about basketball. And sometimes we just don't get to. But now we get to talk about basketball things, hopefully. And there's a lot of basketball things that are going to have to be done for this whole thing to turn around. But at the very least, Monty Williams, look, he has a resume that just experience-wise is kind of interesting. Like, I ran through his playing days and his coaching days. He pretty much had like a future Hall of Famer on every single team. I'm trying to think if there was one where he did not. I mean, there's, as a player, Patrick Ewing, David Robinson, Tracy McGrady, Grant Hill, Allen Iverson. He was, his last year, he was with Allen Iverson's 76ers team in 02-03. Then as a coach, LaMarcus Aldridge, Brandon Roy, Chris Paul, Anthony Davis, Westbrook, Durant, Joel Embiid, Jimmy Butler's personality, however you view him as a player. So he's just been around a lot of really good players and a lot of different personalities throughout his years. And I think that's what Jones kind of said. Like, that's kind of big, especially when you're talking about dealing with young players like DeAndre Ayton, Devin Booker, and hopefully challenging them to get better. Because this is about player development. That's what they said about Igor being fired, was he didn't really do that to some degree, and we'd already debated that, but we don't know X's and O's what this will look like either. But yeah, I mean, you can be comfortable saying that this situation is, I'm gonna jinx it, it's stable just from a basketball perspective right now. Like, I think I'm excited, hopefully, that will remain the case.
So let's go back to what you were talking about with it, which is just some of the trends that we've seen from him. Sam Cooper of the Timeline Podcast found the pace stats and some of the things that directly contradict what's happening in the NBA right now, which is just only five seasons ago with New Orleans. They had a pace of only 91.4 and they shot just 19.3. Sam notes that there's just a huge difference in style right now, and certainly Williams will adapt to that. They're not going to have a 91 pace, and they won't shoot 19 threes a game this year, no matter what his style is going to be. But with that being said, if you look at the roster that he had, he had Drew Holiday, Tyreke Evans, Ryan Anderson, Eric Gordon alongside Anthony Davis. Kind of seems like the group where you would want to run and shoot a lot, and he didn't do it with that group, so it's going to be interesting to see. I'm going to go back and watch some old games if I can find them and just kind of see the stuff that they would run. But I wanted to make this point before we jumped into just Williams' X's and O's and his expectations for him, is that I'm pretty sure Monty Williams would not have taken this job if Devin Booker did not exist.
No.
I'm pretty sure he would not have taken this job if DeAndre Ayton did not exist. And certain little accents on the roster helped for sure. He was not taking this job just because he wants to be a coach of the Phoenix Suns. He took this job because he wants to be a coach of the Phoenix Suns and coach Devin Booker and DeAndre Ayton. And however you want to talk about Ryan McDonough and how responsible he was for this, I wrote a column about a year before he got fired, when it was clear that the playoff drought was going to go up to 7 years, and said, could he be facing a comparison to Brian Colangelo in the near future, where if you look at the Toronto Raptors before they traded DeMar DeRozan, that was a team that Brian Colangelo essentially built, but he did not stick around to see it. And this is a roster that Ryan McDonough built. If the big three, quote unquote, is going to include, or just like the core four or five players, if 60-80% of those are Ayton, Bridges, and Booker, and maybe Jackson, and who knows how the development goes for the rest of the guys, it's going to be McDonough's guys. James Jones was here for it, obviously, but he was here, and I think that just should not go under the radar here, is that they were able to get their first target. They were able to get a good, I don't want to say Monty Williams is a good head coach, because I said last podcast he isn't, but in terms of it's really hard to like rank your top eight NBA head coaches. Once you get to like six, you start to hesitate a bit already, or even five or seven, somewhere in that range. So I think like he is one of the better head coaches out there, and that's that. But that's more of a slight, is what I mean. Like he's a top 20-25 NBA head coach, but that's not saying much. But that's also saying much for the Suns, because they're usually not able to get guys like that, and I think they were able to because of the roster here. So this is not me shining up Ryan McDonough by any means, but I just wanted to be clear that that's part of this as well, and him just knowing those types of players and seeing those types of players, the types of players the Suns have right now. What do you think? Are you going to... I think the use of DeAndre Ayton is going to be the thing we talk about the most here. I can't talk about the use of Devin Booker until I find out who the bleep he's playing next to in the backcourt. Yeah. I really wanted to curse there for a second. I thought about it. Oh, man. Oh, well.
Good, maybe, bleep yourself.
Maybe next time. But obviously the most interesting thing is, how does he use DeAndre Ayton? How much does his time in Philadelphia, one season, mind you, but one season with Joel Embiid there, help him? I think that is an easy thing to discuss, but the Sixers would use him far differently if Ben Simmons didn't exist. They have to use him in a specific way because of how specific and unique of a player that Ben Simmons is. But I think that's the most obvious and fascinating thing, and not challenge necessarily, but how much is he going to... This is where I get nervous and I start to feel things in my chest that don't feel so good, is how much is he going to open the doors to DeAndre Ayton? Because all the doors were locked and closed for him in his rookie season. Hey, roll to the basket, hit your jumper here and there. We're not going to give you the ball that much in the post. Play defense. You're not shooting threes. No way, no how. Well, Monty Williams just... And that's what some people want. They want him to just be shooting threes and attacking off the dribble and everything, but Igor had him very constricted for a reason, because he was raw.
I think I might be taking a few steps back, but when we talk about his style and what he can do with DeAndre, I think the thing that stood out in James Jones's interview, he was on Doug and Wolf right after the hire was announced, was he said that he's open-minded. He said, quote, "I appreciate that because sometimes if you get coaches who are ex-players or come up a certain way, they're kind of stuck. He's not that type of guy. He's been refreshing to me in how wide open he's been," close quote. And that was James Jones just saying, like, I took it as he's learning, like, under Brett Brown, he's learned something. Under, you know, working in the Pop front office for the Spurs, he learned something. So I think his identity as, like, his offensive identity, for example, is going to look completely different, like, when he starts with the Suns compared to his last year in New Orleans. And I think, just again, going back to that experience, hopefully he realizes, like, these guys are different players. And with DeAndre specifically, yeah, it's, you can take a lot of what Embiid does and apply it, at least as far as just sets to get him the ball, schemes to put shooters around him, like, or to stretch him out. And I think he said he'd challenge him, and James Jones was like, yeah, we talked about DeAndre. He says he's going to be, how did he phrase it? Not, I don't remember. He basically said he's going to push DeAndre more, which is, James mentioned the whole DeAndre plays.
He's going to have his hands on him or something like that. I think Evan tweeted something like that.
I don't know. It's one of those sayings that escapes me right now. But yeah, I mean, it's...
Not with kid gloves. He's going to get after him.
Not kid gloves.
No kid gloves on that boy.
Is that like a Mickey Mouse hand?
Who knows, man?
I don't know where that sound came from.
I don't like the imagery.
Yeah. Hopefully... Oh. Okay. Anyway, moving on. Yeah, it's, you hope that he's just learned so much that he creates a completely new identity with this team that he has. And again, we can go back to the point guard thing. I don't know. They need to go get one.
So we just paused the podcast for about 90 seconds. Shams Charania tweeted a video where he is reporting that Robert Sarver, in that second meeting that we had heard about, admitted to some of his past mistakes, said that he is going to really trust Monty Williams and James Jones to do this thing, And then you wouldn't you know it, the word stability was mixed in there as well. And just it sounds like Robert Sarver tried his best to amend whatever reputation that the Suns would have, that Williams would believe the Suns have. And I think it's interesting to hear Sarver say that at the jump, because I'm sure he said that at the jump to a lot of people that he has hired and then subsequently fired, is that I trust you guys to do the job here. You've probably heard about me meddling or whatever. I'm going to stay out of the way. So it sounds like that's the thing for now. And then that goes back to everything about James Jones, which is that this is
his?
Yeah, that this is the guy that it seemed like Sarver handpicked to join the front office almost.
Yeah.
Which is where you can have the most hope that he's going to stay out of the way. Will I ever believe that he is going to stay out of the way? Of course not. Not until he is no longer a person with power in the Suns organization. There is just no logical way to think like that. It's just impossible to believe that he's going to stay out of the way. And I don't think Shams is saying that this was a turning point in the discussion, and I think it's great that he is saying that, of course, but at the same time, you can't really honestly believe him. I think this is far more about the players that he is going to be able to coach and the fact that he got a 5-year deal.
To me, honestly, it doesn't matter about letting coaches do what they want. I mean, he's admitted that. James Jones said Robert isn't the same Robert from 10 years ago. They've been kind of open that, like, Robert is self-aware of these things. It's still concerning that he's there, because it doesn't matter if he's literally never coming in contact with the Suns head coaches. If Monty Williams gets off to a 3-18 start this year, what's to stop Robert from coming down and just telling James Jones to fire him? That's always the concern for me. It doesn't matter, like, him drawing on a whiteboard or putting goats in an office, that's all cute. That maybe is annoying. That's kind of quirky. But are they actually implementing, like, sets around him? No, they just probably let him vent and move on with their day. The coaches do or have in the past. So even if he's not doing that, it's still a matter of, like, you got to operate under the practice that you're giving someone a chance. And I think that's why we've been so negative here, is because it doesn't matter what him existing. You don't know if Monty Williams will have a chance. So that's why I think everyone who's excited over this hire, rightfully so, it looks good. That's why when you come back to Earth in like 2 days, that's my concern. I guess I've already come back down to Earth.
Is there anything else that you want to kind of discuss about Monty? I think it would be wise for us to kind of save the talk of what is he going to do here and looking back on him for next week when
this
we
team,
assume.
Well, this team's going to look completely different. And also, like, he had some trash teams.
He had some trash teams. And also, I just want to see what he has to say. Like, what is he going to say about DeAndre, and what is he going to say about Devin Booker and all these guys? And I think that's when it's more.
We won't know if he might not even come to Phoenix until his playoff run's over, for all we know.
Woj tweeted, I believe, that he is going to stick with them for the remainder of their playoff run. So he might actually, that's a good call. He might not even get introduced until after the lottery, maybe, depending on how the playoffs go for them. Oh boy, Jim Boylan just agreed to a multi-year contract extension with the Bulls. That's hilarious.
Hey,
could always be worse.
The Bulls are always there to make you feel better, Suns fans, for a few days, at least. Could be longer this time. Jim Boylan, long term.
Oh, boy. Grand scheme of things, I think, to close up shop here. I think what we discussed earlier in the week and, like, last week was that in the middle of my rage of the Igor, post-Igor pod, I just... I said that you look at what this team needs, right? And they need to get to a certain level of winning under their youth, to the point where Devin Booker is now 25, DeAndre Ayton's now 22. They don't need that 30-year-old to guide them anymore. They can win 50 games, 45 games on their own. That's how talented those two guys are. But they still need to just get to that point, and they need help getting there. And that's where I suggested Mike Conley, Drew Holiday, and stuff. Monty Williams is actually kind of like that in a way, where he is going to help them get to that point. Now, do you want him being the coach of this team when they're in the playoffs every year? I do not think so. There's a reason that New Orleans saw him gradually improve the wins and still decided, even with a locker room that fully supported him, and Anthony Davis, who had a contract extension coming up that was due, who fully supported Monty, there's a reason they still let him go, because he is a frustrating head coach in the X's and O's and the changes, and schematically there's some stuff that he does that's not that great that we're going to come to learn very soon. And I'm not saying that as a warning or anything. I'm just saying that it's great that they found a guy at head coach that can help them get out of here, because we can talk about it, Igor being a player development guy and all that, but I wrote about it when he got fired, is that at the end of the day, he was not the right guy for the job no matter what, because they just needed a leader in the locker room more than anything. They needed a leader with experience, and that's, I don't want to say Igor's not a leader, because I think he is, but he just wasn't the right type of leader for that.
Yeah, that's fair. I think the local analogy I'll go is Denny Green with the Cardinals. The Cardinals were just embarrassing for years, being in the, ever since they came to the Valley. Then Denny Green kind of turned them into, not, you know, world beaters, but they were respectable. They played hard. You probably didn't want to play them unless you were on Monday Night Football and the Bears or something. But like, he was like, there's that transition thing, you know what I mean? Where there's like the coach who's just has this commanding presence where things are okay. And it doesn't matter if they're not, if they're like stuck a decade ago in X's and O's, it's like, just do your job. They get their guys to do their jobs. And maybe they're not getting the most potential, but they're not extremely underachieving and things are consistent. And that's, I think that's what you're trying to say, is just Monty is that kind of stabilizing force.
Still need to do a lot more, though, and there's still a lot left to be. It is not going to be easy for them to get a point guard. It is not going to be easy for them to fill in the gaps on this roster and clean it up where it needs to be cleaned up. Good hire. They did well.
Don't know what else they would have done still that's better. So
I think that's a really good point. We were looking at options beyond him, and that's where he started getting scared about Hall of Fame point guards who were notoriously mean and just not good people. And you got scared about the other. There is no worry that I have about Monty Williams as the head coach of the team for at least the next 2-3 years, and that, assuming everything goes according to plan, I won't have any worries for the next 2-3 years, and that's pretty great. It's a good job by them. And James Jones's first real thing as a GM that he's done, he brought in Monty. I guess that's one thing we should talk about. Is this an upgrade over Igor? Like, if I told you at the end of the season you could rather have Monty Williams or Igor, would you have?
I actually don't know.
Me neither. I don't know.
I'm skeptical about that even.
I was so team stability and everything that I would have rather had Igor, but you could argue that Monty is going to have a more stable from the jump that Igor would have had in year two.
Yeah.
I think I would slightly lean Monty.
Yeah. I think it's really close. That brings up a good point before we go. Like, James Jones, since being named interim, hasn't screwed anything up royally. Right? We should throw credit his way
a
little bit.
Let's see how he does in the next 2-3 months. It's hard.
I'm just saying, I'm looking for little, like, he hasn't royally screwed something.
Oh, no. And this is not, he's not, I changed my mind on Igor and we're firing him guy. That was not him. They can claim it was his idea all they want. I know whose idea that was.
I don't even care if it was his.
Yeah.
Like, if you don't like a guy and you don't want him working for you, I guess that, and you have the power to, it's, yeah, I don't know. That's all. I just should give credit a little where credit's due.
No, he deserves it. Sarver deserves credit too.
Yeah.
He paid the guy 5 years. That's not something that they have been willing to do in the past. I wish we had access to coach salaries and everything and could see where this actually ranks up so we could actually know the facts here, but that's something that's going to have to come out at another time. But for now, the Suns got their head coach. It's a big, like I said, it's a big 3 months for them. There's the draft lottery, of course, on May 14th, which is going to probably impact what exactly they do. But there is, let's not get it twisted here, there is still little to no margin of error for them in the next 18 months in terms of roster construction. They have to get the right pieces around these two big, young, up-and-coming stars pretty soon for this to not sort of self-destruct. And we shouldn't lose sight of that is what I'm trying to kind of say.
We won't, dude.
I certainly won't. I'm just making sure we don't, as a group, as the Suns Twitterverse that I love with all my heart, just celebrates and looks at the Shams thing. I'm already seeing people talking about how maybe Sarver's changed. Come on, people. We're so smart. I know we're all smart. We can think that he has changed, but let's not claim that he has changed.
Let's give it a few years and then see.
And
two years.
We claimed that he had changed when the Suns started winning under Nash and everything and all this stuff, and people were like, oh yeah, I mean, but that was like, look at all the money that he spent. That was him being cheap and trading Kurt Thomas for, oh man. Remember the Kurt Thomas trades?
Yeah. Remember when Kurt Thomas was really good for the Suns? And
yo, shouts Kurt Thomas, underrated Kurt Thomas.
Yeah.
I loved watching Kurt Thomas. I just have a, I have a personal like little spot in my heart for big men on the floor, but particularly ones that pass well and then ones that just don't really do much but are positives on the floor. Like shouts to my Aaron Baines heads out there. Like that guy's just good and he's good for that team. Al Horford, obviously, that's like the Al Horford All-Stars basically is what I'm saying.
I was wondering how deep you're going to... I was like, were you like a huge Jake Voskal fan? Or?
No.
Okay.
Wait, what? Jake Voskal sucked. Don't put that on Jake Voskal. But I'm the guy who's like, is Robin Lopez kind of low-key nice? Like, are we... Like, is he just on the wrong team right now? I'll be that guy until the day I die, man. Shouts to my man, Nikola Jokic, doing things right now.
He's doing a lot of things.
Get to those West Finals, my guy. You're
I need
so
to read
young.
That story about his body shape. There's some story explaining it. Should I not?
I can't imagine what Nikola Jokic would have done for me when I was 13, because just being the big goofy guy my entire life and just seeing a big goofy man like myself succeeding. Guy runs like, I don't even know what he runs. Like, I've never seen anyone run like that before in my life, but
he
dominates.
He uses his slowness to confuse people about how slow he really is to get off shots. It's amazing.
No one else can do that successfully. No. You cannot trick people into thinking you're slow, and it just like it doesn't work in pretty much anything. But he finds a way to do it. All right. I think that'll wrap it up. Don't really think we have any other thoughts. I think just the whole closing thing is, good job, Suns. Got the guy you wanted. You got him over the Lakers, we think.
Kind of.
I don't
of
know if we mentioned
possibly.
That because we don't really know yet. It seemed like Ty Lue was always going to be their guy, and it seems like, and from what's being reported, that Williams wasn't even offered that job yet. So we'll see how those facts or reports start to trickle out in the next couple of days.
Lottery.
But regardless, yeah, good hire. Lots of work left to be done, though, this offseason. But getting a good head coach for your situation is a huge part of that. And they somehow did that after firing their coach 13 days after the season ended instead of doing it like a day or two after like everyone else normally does. But that's covering the Phoenix Suns. It's never boring. They always find ways to keep it going, and we'll see if that happens with the lottery. We will preview that more and talk about that more in depth next week, and then the week after that, that is the lottery, and that's when things really get going. Pre-draft workouts and the draft and all that fun stuff. Free agency trades are going to happen. We'll be here for all of it. We'll talk to you next week.
Peace.